Hello, before I begin this special installment of Stars on Tap, I would like to thank Ms. Rhea Roma, our co-producer, for bringing us many of the featured artists on this broadcast. Rhea, along with film and music production and a talented artist in her own right, Rhea runs Rhea's Rescues out of her home in Los Angeles, California. She works closely with our mutual friends, the Canine Crusade, .org, and also Operation Blankets of Love, and other rescue operations in the greater Los Angeles area. Rhea's timeless work and tireless work in animal rescue has her noticed as candidate for CNN's Hero of the Year award. I would like to thank Rhea, and we love her, and we appreciate you, Rhea. Thanks. Hello, everyone. This is Steve Martin. Welcome to Stars on Tap. Today is August the 20th, 2013. Our guest today is one of the greatest guitar players of all time, having been lead guitarist for Paul McCartney and Wings, a session player, worked on all kinds of varieties of projects of his own and some projects of others. This is Lawrence Juber. Welcome, Lawrence. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate you calling. I've been really excited for 2 days waiting for this to happen.
There you go. And I appreciate your comments about my guitar playing abilities. I mean, I've always considered myself to be one of those guitar guys. You know, that was my ambition, was to be a professional guitar player, and that's what I, you know, substantially have got to do. I mean, over the years, I've branched out into production, record production, like working with Al Stewart, and I've scored movies and TV shows and...
That's really cool.
Written stage musicals and stuff like that, but you know, but my heart is in being a guitar player, and I have, I think, something like 22 or 23 albums that I've done of my own.
Is so. That all? That's a lot.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a lot. Having just a minute ago looked at some YouTube video, playing that guitar with one hand and looking at the camera like you don't even have to think about it. It's just amazing. It's amazing.
Well, you do have to think about it.
Well, I'm sure you do.
Part of your brain has to think about it. I mean, it's what I do as an artist, as a soloist, is that, you know, I'm a musician who plays guitar, and I use as much of the musicality as I can in order to make a complete musical performance, so I can be in front of an audience and, you know, be able to be the bass player, the lead guitar player, occasionally the drummer too, and the keyboard player all at the same time. And it, you know, really goes along with the whole genre of fingerstyle guitar, which right from the beginning, when I was just a youngster, was something that really appealed to me because of its self-sufficiency. And it's a different way of approaching the guitar to if one is, for example, a lead guitar player and plugging the Les Paul into, you know, the Marshall amp and occupying a different kind of space musically, because you're on stage with, you know, or in the studio with other musicians. But being, you know, a soloist requires, you know, not only the technical skill, but also, you know, a certain amount of kind of performance sizzle, as it were. And, you know, being able to articulate things just with one hand is always, you know, it's kind of, audiences like to see that kind of stuff.
Well, I know my daughter was sitting here, and she's like 21, and she's been trying to learn about you as well as I have for the last couple of days. And she was looking at the video, and she says, "How do you do that with one hand?" I said, "I have no idea, but he's doing it."
Well,
so that's awesome.
The fingers are picking the strings with the left hand much in the same way as they would do it with the right hand. And as long as something is getting that string moving with a little bit of attack on it, then it creates a musical note. But, you know, how you use all that stuff is that's the challenge. I mean, there are some amazingly technically accomplished guitar players out there, and I've never really considered myself to be that much of a technician. I'm just into making music, and I'm pretty good at faking it, you know. Different style and all that. That's really what, because my ambition was to be a studio musician, I just, you know, had this very broad kind of musical sensibility where I listened to a lot of music and try tried to figure out how it worked, recognize the patterns, and that's kind of what drives what I do.
Well, it's driving very well.
Well, thanks.
Well, you're welcome. You started out as a session player in London. Tell me about those years before the Paul McCartney era and who might you have worked with during the session years in London.
I worked with a lot of people, some of whom I had no idea I was even working with. I mean, Alan Parsons' project, I played on the Tales of Mystery Imagination album. I didn't even know until I read it in a magazine 25 years later. The more significant stuff that I did in that period, I played on the score of The Spy Who Loved Me, which was a real treat for me because one of the things that really motivated me, you know, 1963 when I started playing was when Dr. No came out that year, the first James Bond movie, and there's all this wonderful twangy guitar. And so to get to play the James Bond theme on a movie, well, it was just a thrill. And it was as a studio musician, I worked on it. On the show, and he liked my playing and recommended me to Paul and Linda. And about 6 months later, I got called in to do an audition. So it was being a studio player that led me into Wings.
That's awesome.
But during that era, there were, you know, it was all kinds of stuff. I mean, half of it I just have no recollection of at all. But, you know, a lot of French disco records, an artist named Cerone, who was apparently one of the founding fathers of Euro disco, played on a bunch of his records. And I worked on an album with an artist named Lucio Battisti, who's an Italian singer, and I had no idea who he was. And many years later, somebody handed me one of his albums to sign, and I said, well, who is this guy? And he said, oh, and in Italy, he's like Elvis. Yeah. I played with the Italian Elvis and didn't know it.
That's cool.
You know, it was, for me, it was I get up in the morning and I go and do a jingle session at 8 a.m. and a record session at 10 and another record at 2 and some, you know, maybe playing on a variety show pre-record in the evening or some, you know, some kind of TV thing. And so it was all in a day's work, you know, as a studio player, and one didn't always know what was one was playing on. So. But eventually it led me into Wings, and that took me off in a different direction because I then, you know, went to McCartney University and kind of learned how to make records from the other side of the console, you know, from the producer side of the console, and learned what it meant to be an artist and how the whole record business worked from the inside, as opposed to, you know, as a musician, you don't always get to see that mechanism. And eventually it led me to move to New York when Wings was breaking up, and I met Hope, who became my wife, and she was from LA, and I ended up moving to Los Angeles, having, you know, it actually started getting settled into New York as a studio musician there, and then more slowly got myself into studio work in LA, and then over the years worked on hundreds of TV shows and dozens of movies, and some of which have been extremely successful. I think the biggest selling album I've ever played on was Dirty Dancing, which last count had sold about 42 million albums.
That's crazy. You know, yeah. My wife has seen that show like 20 times, and if it's on 20 times a day, she's going to make me watch every time.
Yeah, I played on Time of My Life, and She's Like the Wind, and, you know,
cool.
the newly recorded songs from that movie, and a whole bunch of stuff, a lot of TV shows, Happy Days, even going back to Happy Days when it was still in production in the early 80s in L.A., but most notably Home Improvement, Roseanne, Seventh Heaven. You know, when my kids were little, you know, we were raising a family, I really didn't want to go out on the road and be traveling. I wanted to be around for my kids. So I just kind of directed myself to get back into studio work, which I was certainly equipped to do. And but during that time, I'd also, because my motivation to to write and start to develop some kind of fingerstyle repertoire really came out of that period when I was in Wings. I was working on stuff and eventually got off the record deal and started recording solo albums and getting out and touring as a concert performer, as a clinician, applying all the lessons I'd learned at McCartney University.
You must have had such a young, successful life of working with Beatle people, and the thing I want to ask you is how about working with George Martin? I think he produced the Beatles for the most part.
Yes, he did. I didn't work with George Martin very much. He was actually one of the first albums I played on was for a great English jazz singer named Cleo Lane. And George Martin produced that record, and it was really a great experience to work with somebody who had that much charisma. You know, very often record producers were people who got the job done and didn't really necessarily have those kinds of credentials. I mean, the Beatles to have produce that band was, you know, really kind of the top of the, you know, top of the heap. But he had a great bedside manner. I mean, I was very wet behind the ears at that point, you know, so I was, you know, like trying to, for example, that we were doing a track that was in B major and I was trying to tough it out without using a capo and acoustic guitar, and it, you know, just like, whereas now I would just automatically put the capo on and not even think twice about it. I was, you know, I was trying to be the studio stud. And he had a very good way of dealing with that kind of thing. So it was very educational for me and just a thrill to work with somebody who had those kind of credentials.
I'm sure.
And that's been true, you know, over the years. I've worked, you know, on occasion with great composers or great producers that wouldn't necessarily be a regular gig, but have all contributed to my stock of experience.
Amazing. What a story. It's no wonder you got a book coming out, and I want to ask you about that in a second. But most musicians don't seem to have a degree in music, and you do. How important was that to you to get that degree, and do you think it's really worked for you?
Well, I think that it was important to me to honor my parents because they didn't get a chance to have a university education. Because they grew up in London during the Blitz, and, you know, which was just a bad time to be a teenager in England, you know, during World War II.
Sure.
And I had those opportunities, and I also realized that having a musical education would give me more tools to work with, because it wasn't just about being a guitar player. For me, it was about being an all-around musician and having a real sense of historical and musicological context for music making, which is really one of the reasons I can step into pretty much any situation, whether it's, you know, I mean, whether it would be to get up on stage and play some hard rock or to, you know, put on a Renaissance shirt and wield a lute and play in a Shakespearean production or something. I mean, I have a range to my musical knowledge and experience that really was, I think, you know, given a foundation by virtue of having the education. But my musical education wasn't strictly... It wasn't a strict classical education by any means, but there was a lot of that, you know, kind of real legit side to it. And I really started to appreciate it when I started getting into actually, like, writing music for movies and having the opportunity to write and orchestrate, you know, for decent-sized orchestras. Very useful. And all that knowledge kind of channels itself into my solo guitar work because I have the sound of all those instruments in my head. So I might be articulating a line on the guitar. Let's say I'm playing I Am the Walrus, and there are certain cello lines, or, you know, Strawberry Fields Forever is another one, where those George Martin arrangements of John Lennon's compositions, you know, incorporate orchestral sounds, and I can emulate, you know, within my musical imagination, emulate the sound of a cello or a cello section, for example, or the sound of a harpsichord or whatever. You know, so it's part of my musical consciousness. And you know, on a fairly deep level. So I think it's part of what audiences seem to find compelling about my performances, is there's a dimension that goes beyond simply the guitar playing aspect of it.
You know, I think that has to be a gift from God.
Well, they're all gifts from God. I mean, it's, you know, the music is the ultimate gift. Because it really, you know, it's a way of people being able to communicate non-verbally. It crosses cultural boundaries. It just, it's an amazing thing. And vibration is the, you know, the kind of the essence of the universe. Is, you know, that's how everything is put together. And music is a reflection of that.
Awesome. Okay. Give us a little bit of an idea, real quickly. I know you're still got some things to do, and I understand that. But what was it like when you first found out that Paul McCartney and Wings were interested in you?
It was exciting, but it was also a little nerve-wracking because I didn't know any Wings tunes. My ambitions, you know, as a studio player, were to be, you know, kind of be a hotshot guitar player, and Wings was essentially, you know, a pop rock group. And as much as I was a Beatles fan, I wasn't necessarily quite such a Wings fan. So I borrowed some LPs from my brother over the weekend because I got the call. I was actually at Abbey Road Studios when I got the call for the audition, and it was on a Friday, and they were calling me in on the following Monday. April of 78, and so I borrowed some updates, realized that there was just no way I was going to learn the repertoire, so you know, it was a little nerve-wracking, but I figured that I would be able to make a decent impression, and apparently I did. I think, you know, I fit the suit. They were looking for a versatile guitar player, and I was right for what they were looking for. Where I could cover all the, you know, all the different kinds of sensibilities that Paul has in his writing, but still have some kind of rock sensibility too. The audition was, I mean, we jammed. We played some Chuck Berry tunes. We played some reggae grooves. It was really, it happened quite, you know, it was quite a quick process.
Sounds like it.
It didn't take very long, and I, you know, when they offered me the gig, I had to think about it for about a nanosecond, because I knew that I would be giving up my studio career to do it, but I couldn't say no.
How could you say no?
Well, exactly. How can you say no to the opportunity to be in a band with Paul McCartney? I mean, it just, you know, made perfect sense to me to do, and I did.
Absolutely. Do you have many good memories of other Beatles and working with Paul? Everybody get along and work well?
Oh, yeah. Paul's a great person to work with. I mean, he is, you know, he really is a great band leader and a great producer himself, and, you know, such a powerful musical talent. I mean, it was a rare opportunity for me. I did get to work with him and Ringo together. He produced some tracks for a Ringo album called Stop and Smell the Roses, and we went to France and spent 10 days making music together, and that was a real treat, playing with half the Beatles. And then a few years later, after Wings had broken up in the mid-80s, I worked with George Harrison on a track for the Shanghai Surprise movie, too.
Awesome. Very good. Do you think that because of the death of John Lennon, do you think that had anything to do with the folding of Wings?
Not directly. I mean, it had more to do with the fact that they didn't tour again for 10 years. well, the best part of a decade. I think my theory is that because Wings was Paul and Linda's group, and Linda really had got to the point where having, you know, four kids and having done, you know, the world tour and, you know, the Wings over the world stuff, that I think that she just was running out of steam with it. And because there was that, there was the not touring, and George Martin getting involved in the Tug of War record. What you really need to do is listen to Paul's version of Coming Up and mm-hmm. the Wings live version of Coming Up, and you realize that where Paul was going as an artist was not the same direction that the band was going. So he really encouraged us to think like a band, to, you know, to make our own contributions to it. But at the end of the day, it had got to the point where Paul McCartney as an artist and Wings as a band were going in different directions. And of course, you know, Paul would be the dominant paradigm there. And Linda, because she really just was just, it just wasn't working as well for her because she had her family responsibilities too. But that really was a big part of it.
I see.
And, you know, the bust in Japan didn't help because it exposed the vulnerabilities of being on the road.
Absolutely.
And that was hard on her, and it was hard on the kids.
I just kind of wonder how you hide all that. I mean,
how you hide it?
Well, I mean, if you're trying to sneak it on a plane, I mean, it's got to be a pretty good size bit. I'm just saying.
It wasn't well hidden.
Right.
And it should never have been there in the first place.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, part of that was a reflection of the fact that that life was somewhat in a bubble. You know, when you're operating on that level of fame and success, and mistakes can get made, and that's what happened. So, you know, it wasn't the best choice.
Sure.
And it did have an impact. If that hadn't happened, we probably would have toured America in the summer of 1980 with a number one record. And then it probably would have wound down after that anyway, because it just was not fitting the family lifestyle in the same way as it had.
I can see that. Sure.
Yeah.
Before we start talking about this caninecrusade.org, what I wanted to see was you have two Grammys, and
yeah,
you have some CD projects of your own, and
many CDs, yeah.
And what really interests me is you have a book coming out in October.
Actually, it won't be October; it's going to be later.
Okay.
I actually had them push it back because I really wanted it to come out next year, so it'll actually be coming out. I'm anticipating probably somewhere around the beginning of the spring, because we're still working on it. I actually was online with my graphic designer, and it's turning out really well. When I was in Wings, I got a really good camera, and I took a lot of pictures. And many of them are quite candid, and, you know, because you can't be disrupted in that kind of studio situation, much of it was taken without flash, using fast film, which is how Linda used to do things. I mean, as much as Paul was my musical mentor, and Linda was my photographic mentor at the time. And these pictures have just been sitting in boxes, you know, sitting in shoe boxes for 30 years. And I was offered a deal and to put out a book. And so I started going through and finding stuff I didn't know I had. Some really cool stuff. And it kind of brings you, it was all, much of it, the centerpiece of it is the Back to the Egg sessions. So you kind of get really brought into our studio environment and the farm in Scotland, Abbey Road, the castle in Lynn Castle on the south coast of England. And then, but it's a career-wide book. I mean, there's some bio stuff in there, some of my early studio work, later studio work. And my brother took a whole bunch of really cool live pictures too. So we've got, you know, pictures of the last, the UK tour, 79 UK tour. some backstage stuff, and but also kind of sidebars about various guitars that I've played and a lot of stuff. Some really cool stories later on. Some really cool stories about how Hope and I met, and the Beatle relation, the Beatle context of that, and stuff about my solo work and my studio work. I mean, you've got some pages from some pictures from some of the recording sessions for shows like Home Improvement, some fairly iconic sounding instruments that I play on, and then stuff about my Martin signature guitar, because I have, over the last decade, we've done various incarnations of models of my studio guitar. So all very interesting and compelling stuff, and I'm just trying to make sure that the book isn't too big, because we could easily go to like 400 or 500 pages, and I don't want it to be that big. But it's a coffee table book, so.
Sounds like it's going to be an excellent read.
What's that?
I said it sounds like it'll be an excellent read.
It should be. I think it's going to be, you know, quite an interesting thing, and especially for people that are fans of the late Wings era. But there's also, I mean, there's some contextual stuff that, you know, Hope's dad was Sherwood Schwartz, who created both Gilligan's Island and the Brady Bunch. And it's really fascinating to me that the two strongest creative figures in my career, you know, Paul McCartney and Sherwood Schwartz, and having been at this strange nexus of British invasion and Americana, American TV consciousness, it's quite a fascinating place to be in that respect. So there's a little bit of that kind of pop culture resonance in there too. So just an interesting progression.
Sounds like it's going to be fantastic.
Thanks.
You're welcome. What we're really here for is to talk about K9Crusade.org, the Malibu Inn on the 24th. I believe it starts at 7 p.m. You're a new add-on, I believe, to the roster.
Yeah, that came up quite suddenly, and I really don't know very much about the Canine Crusade. Only that, you know, we're dog lovers. We have 2.5 dogs ourselves. We have 2 dogs of our own, and then our daughter Ilse, who's a singer-songwriter, has her own dog. He spends a lot of time with us because she's a busy writer, and you know, is just, he likes to have the dog microphone. Her dog likes to have play dates with our dogs. So we definitely we have a great affection for canines, and the opportunity to help promote a worthy cause in that regard is certainly well worthwhile. And I'm going to be there as a you know, making a kind of a cameo appearance, playing some of my solo stuff, and perhaps playing a tune or two with the band too. So
sounds like a good time. I'm glad you're going to be there. The crusade thing for animals is very important to me, as well as I'm sure it is you. You know, I work with several rescue operations in the greater Los Angeles area, and I just really hope that these guys can really make a difference, and I appreciate you coming in there and trying to make a difference as well, and make people aware that this kind of thing doesn't have to happen. You can spay and neuter an animal. You can, you know, take one in. You know, but what I really want to say is, don't go out and get an animal on the fly, and 2 weeks later, let it go. That animal has a heart, and they know. And you don't lead them into a false hope of I've got a family, and then turn around and not know where your next meal's coming from. That's what really bakes my biscuits.
That's right. I mean, you got to be, you know, with animals. I mean, we have 3 cats too, but you know, the dogs especially. I mean, they're such vulnerable creatures, and they're so they have such great hearts. So you got to respect that, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Their personalities really. You got to enjoy that, what they what they can deliver, and the fact that they're really, you know, it's unconditional love.
It is. When those tails
start wagging, it's, you know, it's they just, and it's not just because they want to be fed or walked, you know, it's just because they really, I think they, you know, but you know what's funny with dogs is, I mean, we always think that, you know, we think about, you know, the humanity having domesticated dogs, you know, from their wild ancestors. But I really think it's the other way around. I think they domesticated us.
You could look at it that way. You sure could.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a pit bull that I've raised since a baby, and she's four. She's helped me raise three grandkids. They're all under 3 years old right now. They all live here. We adopted four cats with four different personalities. And the pit bull and the cats and the kids get along like genuinely just great.
Yeah.
I mean, there's.
But we also have birds, too.
I've had those.
Yeah, we have an African gray, and we have a parrotlet and a gray cheek conure, I think it is. And some parakeets. And, you know, so our house is full of woofing, meowing, and twittering, so.
That's all right. That's all right. Is there anything else you want to tell us, Lawrence, before I let you go?
No, I think that, you know, anybody that's listening that may be considering coming, I think it's going to be a terrific night, and it's certainly a worthy cause, and I'm certainly looking forward to it.
Sure. The Malibu Inn on the 24th.
That's
featuring,
right, and I believe it's a 8 o'clock show.
Is it at 8 o'clock?
It's open at 7.
All right. All right.
Well, it's great talking to you.
Yes, sir, you too.
I appreciate you having me on board here.
If you'll give me just a moment to do my credits, I'll let you go.
Of course, yeah.
All right. I need to let everybody know that Stars on Tap is brought to you by LexingtonBroadcasting.com for the best and top 40 country music on the internet. I'd like to thank my wife, Betty. Without Betty, I couldn't pull this off. She fixes the things that I break and keeps things running that aren't broke. And she's really good at what she does, and I love her for that, and I just want everybody to know that. I'd like to thank her brother station, which is Jimmy Lawson Space Coast Eye Radio out of Merritt Island, Florida, for playing this show and a couple others that I do. Jimmy has always been a good friend, and he runs a good product out of Merritt Island, Florida, and that's spacecoastiradio.com. I'd like to mention OperationBlanketsOfLove.org out of Los Angeles, California, where you can go and donate a blanket or a towel or a sheet or anything at all to make an animal comfortable in a shelter so that when the family comes to pick him up, he's felt comfortable and happy and makes a transition into a good home. I'd also like to mention, as we've been talking, CanineCrusade.org, where they go and rescue the animals and find people to give them a good home, and I really think you should look into that as well. Get your animals from a shelter and not from a puppy mill. I'd also like to thank God for the opportunity of being able to talk to Lawrence today about his wonderful career with Paul McCartney and Wings, all his session work, all his wonderful stories, and his new book coming out. And I just want to thank everybody for listening, and I'm Steve Martin, your host. Until next time, enjoy the music.